fired up. Let's do it. It's the State of Combat on CBS Sports, and it's back with a bang. Mixed martial arts style coming after your ear holes. The Brian Campbell, unquestionably the voice that you hear. Hey, I'm ready to talk cage fighting with you, bro, Hams, all right? And I'm ready to hit you hard. Backed, jacked, and stacked, and underwritten by, of course, that performance-enhancing audio. Look, we might have to run and get a triple-double today. We might open up a new chapter, a new era in combat audio.
Welcome to the Machida era.
No, Joe Rogan. That era did not last too long. This one will last a lot longer. Loaded show for you today, fellas. Breaking down. Why do I keep saying fellas? Do I not think we have female listeners? It might be a reality, or maybe not after that sound drop. All right, but anyway, loaded show coming at you, of course, recapping all things UFC London. Boy, did Jorge Masvidal, 1 week after being on this show, make a leap in the public consciousness, throwing bows backstage. We will break it all down, plus a lot of stuff going on in the news between Conor McGregor, Tony Ferguson. Stuff to laugh about, stuff that's very serious. We'll get all into that. But before we do, man, wow. You know I want to remind you, if you like this show, please hit us up on Apple Podcast. We're now on Spotify. Hey, wherever you seduce and consume fine audio and give us that 5-star review. And why don't you join me in welcoming back my co-host, fresh off that honeymoon. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's Brandon Wise, number 65 in your scorebook, but number one in our hearts. B-Man, back from the vacay on the snowy streets of Montreal. How is it?
BC, I am loving life. I got a nice time to recharge, reconnect, you know. Me and the wife had some time together, 5 days together, walking around the streets of Montreal. Did not expect to get hit with a blizzard in the middle of
That's true.
It was awesome. It was one of the best trips we've ever taken together. Had way too much poutine. I sent you guys a couple pictures. I swear to God, I thought I had a heart attack a couple times. It was incredible.
That's
the only way I can describe it.
You inspired me because I went out to dinner Friday night, my wife, the neighbors, and they had a poutine as an app. And I got busy with it.
It's not the same though.
No, it's not. It's not the same as Montreal poutine. It's not the same, but it's
just not the same ingredients. That's the problem.
All right. I'm not going to fight that. I'm not going to fight you on that. What I will ask you this is, though, what's the MMA pulse in Montreal? Because the last time I was there was 2011. I saw GSP front row at the Bell Center for a big-time boxing match. The place went nuts. I saw a lot of GSP around town, like gyms with his picture in the window, memorabilia in the stores. Did you run into Patrick Cote at all? Where are we at here?
I did not see Patrick Cote, but it's funny that you mentioned that because I went to the Bell Center to like just check it out and see if there was anything up there. Didn't see anything about GSP, but I did listen to the pod last week while you and Jack and Mikey were taking control of the reins, and I did actually see a couple of MMA gyms just like randomly on the side of the roads in downtown Montreal. Couple of giants in there, just mixing it up, rolling on the mats, you know.
Donald Brashear. A lot of
future Stefan Struves rolling around on the mats.
All right.
I'm not a martial artist. I am a fighter.
Yeah, a lot of cage fighters is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of artists. Just a lot of big sweaty cage fighters.
I mean, there's a lot of art in Montreal, dude. Right.
Well, I don't mean I was talking mixed. Martial artists. I wasn't talking about painters on the cobblestone streets of old Montreal. I've been to Montreal a bunch of times, but that was back when I took life a lot less serious and I did a lot of really bad things. So we really can't tell those stories, Brandon, but I hope you enjoyed your sojourn in French land. Great to have you back, although Jack Crosby did fill in well, that utility player. Mikey, not on the show this week, but we always love his producing skills and jumping in and out. But Brando, I want to talk UFC London with you. I want to talk about a lot of things. I want to talk about how you randomly dropped on me the other day that when you guys won the state title at North Boca High, you had NFL alum Keith Byers as your high school head coach. How does a friend tell a friend about that in passing?
I seriously feel like I've told you that before, but whatever.
No, No. What did you guys do that year? Did you guys win it all? Did you win the national championship?
No, we did not. We lost in the second round of the playoffs. We had a good team. Like, we had one of the best teams in our school's history, but we just ran into, like, a weird matchup in the second round against a linebacker that was 6'3 and 240.
Where is he playing now?
Cut. He is playing as, like, a barber in Cincinnati somewhere. He signed a full ride to FSU, but he just didn't cut it there.
All right. He didn't cut his teeth there. He was probably – no, we'll end that there. All right. You know, that's fine. It is March Madness week. You do some editing and some work on CBS Sports in the college hoops field. You fire it up. You got the feeling. Because when I hear March Madness, I don't really watch college hoops today, but I think of the good old days, man. You know what I'm saying? What's the one buzzer beater or moment, like when you hear March Madness, that you're like, that's the moment. I was there. That's the moment.
For me?
Yeah, in your fandom, in your personal fandom.
I mean, there's not a fandom for me because I mean, I'm a Kentucky fan, but that's like family based because of my dad's side of the family's from Kentucky. But for me, my moment that I remember the most is when I was working here 3 years ago when it was Villanova against North Carolina in the championship game.
Oh, yeah.
And North Carolina hit like a crazy shot with 5 seconds left. And then Villanova got it immediately down the court and hit a pull up three to win the first ever buzzer beater for the national championship.
That was wild. That's pretty insane to be in the newsroom for. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think anything will top the Christian Laettner shot to beat Kentucky as a fan watching. That's just insane. I didn't have anything in the bracket that year. I don't think I've really have I ever won a bracket? I hate brackets. Don't tell me about your fantasy team. Don't tell me about your bracket. But no, brackets are big business. College basketball is big business. It's March Madness. It's time. And I know why. I know that you want to win your bracket. It's a no-brainer. That's why you get into it. Well, let me tell you what can help you. Sportsline can help you, brother, with those sought-out after office bragging rights. I know when you're walking around the halls at CBS Sports in Fort Lauderdale, you want to feel big. You want to feel strong. You want to feel like you have what it takes to win the office pool this year. Well, let me tell you about Sportsline-wise. Last year, their optimal bracket finished in the top 5% of CBS Sports brackets and called Villanova winning it all. But that's not just all. Their upset bracket called 12 of 18 first-round upsets by double-digit seeds the past 3 years. So here's what I want the listeners to do. Wise, if you're still listening, here's what I want you to do. Visit sportsline.com/brackets for the insight you need to win. And State of Combat listeners, get fired up for this. You can sign up for Sportsline using the promo code FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, FIGHT. And you'll get your first month for just $1. Hey, Brando, you can't beat that with a bat. Hammer can't touch that.
Okay. You are right.
All right. Hey, there it is. Big business, big brackets coming at you. All right. Do you have your one championship brackets out at all for their Grand Prix?
I need my PFL bracket, man.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Ray Seffo last week on the show. He was solid. It was great. He got me a little bit fired up for PFL.
Dude, I told you before, I really think PFL might be a decent competitor. Not competitor, but I guess AAA type fight card or fight organization for UFC now that they're together with ESPN. I like that deal for them a lot. That gives them a lot more authority, but it gives them a lot more prestige by being on ESPN as opposed to NBC Sports.
You know, Ray fielded the question we all had with sort of the non-answer of, you know, does this make them now a feeder league? We don't really know that. I think it's a different model altogether. I mean, look, their unique season format is different. The $1 million prize at the end for people that want to stay active, you can get 5 fights in a year. There's a lot that's different. I'm more interested in knowing how they can recruit people with that model because it's a good time to be an MMA free agent right now, as we saw Eddie Alvarez, Demetrius Johnson, Sage Northcutt, on and on, what they're doing at one. Bellator trying to bring in people, Vitor Belfort going to one. I think you can go to PFL and make some money and be on ESPN now, and you might have people just tuning in going, oh, is this UFC? And just watching it.
But how, if you're an MMA free agent at this point, do you want to fight 5 times in a year, even if it means $1 million? Like, that's a lot of wear and tear.
Maybe not the upper elite, but there are people that do not like their standing within UFC, so.
Sure.
You know.
And they need the money.
There are people that are just hungry. They just want to fight. They're just hungry, bro. All right?
I'm hungry.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, you're hungry to talk UFC. London and Jorge Masvidal. First of all, the interview we had last week with you and him was that dude was just a different cat. And he's always a great interview because he is wired differently. I mean, he comes from the same backyards as Kimbo Slice, literally, in terms of backyard fighting in Greater Miami. It's just a different dude. But what a friggin' weekend for that guy. I called him a live dog on multiple shows and formats here, and I believe that he could win, but I didn't know if I believed it would be that demonstrative and leave that kind of message. Forget the Leon Edwards stuff for a second. We'll get to it, but what a damn weekend. He just beat Darren Till, and he just made a monster statement at welterweight.
Putting aside the interview that I did with him, his interview with Brett Okamoto after the Leon Edwards stuff was even better, I thought. He came out with like another quick tagline. He said he gave him the three piece and soda.
Wow.
But he
done cut up your boy Leon Edwards there. I mean,
yeah, he did. But to go back to the Till fight. So that starts and I got immediately scared because Darren Till dropped him. And it was one of those where you were like, uh-oh, this could get dangerous really quick because that's the kind of fighter Till is, right? Like he wants to get in there, get you out quick and just finish you with as many punches as he can. But Jorge survived that onslaught. He said after the fight, he didn't even know what he got hit with when that happened. So that kind of scares me that he might have actually been knocked out at that point. But to his credit, he scrambled. He got back to his feet. And dude, that was just an amazing fight in general. Like Darren Till for as much as we don't really think he's that good, he will give you all he's got. And he's going to throw as much as he can. He's going to fight. He fought at way too high of a pace in that fight, trying to stay with Masvidal's speed. But it was such an entertaining bout because they were just high speed chess. It was only going to end one way. And that way is how it ended for Darren Till.
You know, I don't want to get labeled as a Darren Till hater because it's not that I don't think he's good. It's the fact that I only think he's good. He might improve. He might become great one day, but he's not great now. He wasn't great when he was fast-tracked to the title, and I think you ended up seeing that how it played out. Man, is he a big welterweight. I mean, really, it's freaky how big of a welterweight he is, and he did drop Masvidal, but it was Masvidal's craft, Brandon, that got him back into that fight. You got to give him credit for shaking off the cobwebs, and I know he finished him with a really creative looping left hand, but it was the way that he set up his punches. He really worked in fakes to close down that distance. And then he was, man, there's a lot to his game. And we talked about it last week. How close was he to a title shot when he lost at UFC, right before UFC 211, right? That split, or maybe it was 211, that split decision to Damian Maia. Maia went on to fight Woodley for the title. Who knows, it could have been Masvidal. He loses that fight. Then he lays the egg against Stephen Thompson, takes the year plus off, clears his head. He's always been this guy who never could make that final leap. Could be his time now, man, because there's so much craft there. There's so much toughness. He's a wild man. I liked more for the technique than I did for the boom, and boy, did he lay the boom on Till. But UFC has given Till every opportunity to succeed, and even this was, you know, a homecoming, a get well, not a get well in terms of an easy opponent, but a we're going back to London where you're a star. Go be that man. He's not that man. And that's just the way it is. He's not. And he may need to go to middleweight to either find himself or just find out that he's good but not great. And that just may be where it ends up. And that's fine, Brandon. They try to make this guy a star. He's not a star. He's not.
he's a star in England. That's where it is, though. Like, he still will draw. And, I mean, they got a record crowd there, I think, right, this weekend? Or they got a big number, regardless. But to go back to Jorge Masvidal really quickly, I'm just happy he's back, because what he said in that interview that I did with him just showed out in this fight that he needed that time off. He needed to recharge, because going back to 2016, he fought 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He fought 6 times within like a 20-month period. That's way too much for him.
That's Cowboy Cerrone level. That's how you get washed.
And that's why that's kind of what happened was he lost to Lorenz Larkin with a split decision. Then he beat Ross Pearson and knocked out Ellenberger and Donald Cerrone. And he got fast-tracked because he was just looking so good and so great. And that's how you end up biting off more than you can chew, so to speak, too quickly, and losing to a Damian Maia and losing to a Stephen Thompson. So I think this is going to help him. I really hope that they don't force him into a bad fight or into a quick turnaround, just trying to capitalize on him being in the news and in the consciousness right now. I hope that they give him a little bit of time to regather himself here and let him stay motivated, you know, because that's the biggest thing is if he's not motivated, then what? He's not going to look as good as he did this weekend. He needs a dance partner, and he needs to be able to get his mind right to this position again where he can take on these big name opponents. So I don't know that a title fight is next for him. I definitely don't think that should be next, even though Kamaru Usman was saying this weekend that he would prefer to take on him instead of Colby Covington, which was kind of funny. But
yeah, why do you think Ali and Usman came out with that?
Well, because Jorge Masvidal and Colby Covington are teammates, so they're trying to create friction within ATT to make it like, who's going to get the title fight next? It's one of you two, and make you guys choose and make you guys get upset at each other about it kind of thing. Where Jorge Masvidal is not that kind of person. He's just not.
See, okay, then my instant reaction was different. My instant reaction was to come out and make a statement like that. And then look, there's no way UFC's just going to honor that because that's what they want. But it kind of smelt to me like, do they think Colby's a tougher fight than they're acting? Do they think his wrestling can potentially counteract and cancel out Kamaru's? Where they look at Masvidal as a type of fight style-wise, despite how great he looked on Saturday, that's better for them. That's what I sort of wanted to examine and break into. How's Masvidal's wrestling? Is it on that level?
Yeah, it's okay. It's not his biggest asset. I mean, his biggest asset is his hands. He's a brawler. He's a boxer by trade, a street fighter by trade all the time.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I wonder where that was going. But your point on he does need to be focused. He does need to be taken seriously. He's the perfect B-side for UFC right now, where you put him against bigger names and he'll rock the boat. Man, was this a tour de force weekend to show you about his personality, about that he's for real, that he don't care, that there's grit and a backbone there, that he's that dude, that you can play up the craziness and he'll live up to it if you want to. But yet at the same time, if you really hear him, I mean, shouting out his family in the cage, there's some depth and substance to this dude. We saw that in the interview with you, even though he sounded like he just got straight off the ball and went during that. But, you know, you work out all day, you're going to be exhausted at the end of it. Man, dude, this was a leap to say that I could get a title shot now. I don't think he will. It's crowded. But he doesn't want Leon Edwards, who he lit up afterwards in one of the more surreal recent moments we've seen, and it happened to be caught on ESPN Plus cameras. He's thinking this fast tracks him to a title shot. I just don't see it when you got Colby sitting around there, when Askren is so hot right now. I don't see him getting any of those people. So did he just open up a new line of credit here, giving him a feature fight against Leon Edwards? He may have. He could say he doesn't want it, but we got a story now. We got a storyline.
I don't know that it fast-tracked him. I mean, the Leon Edwards thing, I don't have the full story, but I feel like it started because Leon Edwards was one position ahead of him in the UFC rankings, and for some reason these fighters still take those rankings seriously. And Leon Edwards probably assumed that because he was the co-main event and Jorge was the main event, getting all the love after that fight, because Leon Edwards got openly booed in England. I thought that was weird.
That was wild.
I mean, I don't want to say like racism stuff played into that, but I find it hard to believe it didn't. When you're facing a dude from Iceland and you're in your home country getting booed by your hometown crowd,
well,
like
it, they, you know, the announcers mentioned it and they thought it played off how Edwards treated Till, who's, you know, the beloved homeboy at that point, how he treated him at the press conference and in the public events, sort of calling him out and trying to make a name for him. Look, the only thing we said about Leon Edwards coming in is that he's fantastic, but he's not really marketable, doesn't really put himself out there on that level. I think that was his attempt to do that. So the crowd sort of turned on him. Plus, people love this Gunnar Nelson cat, man. They love this dude. People love this guy, so maybe
I mean, probably. But anyway, that fight in the back after the event, I just couldn't help but laugh. Like we were watching this play out in like real time, and we're just kind of like, wait, they like got in a real fight? Like hands were thrown, or was this a shouting match in the back like Colby and Kamaru? No, they threw hands. Well, Jorge threw hands.
I'm blown away that it escalated to that, that no one jumped in. You're right. When I first heard that, oh, the scuffle, it's like a push, maybe one punch hit the side of a guy's face. No, he gave him a three-piece straight up with a cup of soda and the side of chips, and he cut his eye. He bloodied him instantly, man. Jorge is that dude. Brandon, I hope, and Dana White, of course, came out afterwards and was like, you know, how did this happen, blah, 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 blah. And I really hope that Masvidal gets no punishment, and that the UFC realizes how marketable it is when stuff like this happens. I know that there's times when it's not good. 229, not good. Look like Thugs R Us. Look like unsafe to be in the building. But this is what NASCAR used to do back when NASCAR was hot. You remember those days? Let them fight. Let there be beefs. Let people like. If you're going to call a guy out and walk toward him like Masvidal told Okamoto, where I come from, if you put your hands up and you walk toward a person, you're going to fight. So, man, that was great. That was great.
That's what I was saying. Like the Okamoto interview was just so amazingly Jorge and so Miami, by the way. Just, I walk towards somebody with my hands behind my back. I'm not trying to fight you. But if you put your hands up, you best be ready to fight. I mean,
that's very Miami, but it's not Boca. So don't act like that.
So yeah, like I mean, we're gonna see that fight next, right? Like I don't know
we
who
need
else
to
Jorge
see that fight next, because it makes a lot of sense in the rankings. Look, Leon Edwards came out, tough fight, gets his seventh straight win, gets the split decision against Gunnar Nelson. But Edwards is on some roll right now, and we can break into that Edwards Nelson fight in a second, but this makes sense to find out, to eliminate guys, find out who's next in the rankings. And when you have a fight now with a grudge in it that you can show that video, we sat through months of the damn dolly going through the window and UFC not backing away from that. You know how you sell this fight? You make it the main event of a fight night on ESPN and you play the video of him lighting Edwards up. It's not that hard. It's called promotion, Brandon.
By the way, just to backtrack a little bit, because we got a little sidetracked. Darren Till, I think now, like you said, maybe middleweight makes more sense for him, where he can be a little bit stronger, perhaps. He won't be as quick, but he will be a little bit stronger. His power will probably translate better, kind of the way Anthony Johnson's power translated once he moved from 170 to 185.
He might be quicker, though, with not having to...
You think so?
Trim himself down. Moving up from a smaller weight class against larger opponents, you could end up with a speed advantage.
But if he doesn't, can we finally see him against Ben Askren? Like, please?
Yeah, Big Ben was there. Not Big Ben Rothwell, not that absolute weirdo.
Right now, there is not a man in this planet that can stop me inside this octagon, and only politics can slow me.
Well, last week, another guy stopped you. Not just politics, but yeah, Ben Askren with the T-shirt, by the way, in the crowd. Look, yeah, he was there to mix it up, but yeah, I would love that fight. But here's the thing. Askren's either going to fight Lawler again, or they're going to fast-track him into something big. So you're not going to face Till coming off a loss.
But what's big, though? Is it him against Colby? For Askren, I'm saying. Or, I'm sorry, for Till, I'm saying.
Till's coming off two losses now. It's he's going to be further down the rankings. He needs to get well. As much as there is get wells in the UFC, he's going to fight another guy coming off a loss.
Man.
Look, this damages the brand, man. I don't know what they... I know what they saw in him, but there were warning signs that he wasn't that dude. He didn't beat Stephen Thompson, and he missed weight like a bastard, Brandon, like by a lot.
I think he's perfect for the slot that they had him in for this fight, though. Just have him headline the UFC on ESPN Plus events over in England for the next couple of years. And if he goes up in the rankings, great. But if he doesn't, that's where he stays, because he still is. He will still draw for that crowd. I don't know how well he'll draw here for a fight night event, but in England, sure. That's a good spot for him.
Well, he's going in the wrong direction. It's all coming up Masvidal right now. And do you think he beats Edwards?
Masvidal?
Yeah.
Yeah. I said it on Saturday when we were watching this fight. I hate that welterweight has just become a division of grapplers. Like, I want somebody like Masvidal. That's why I got behind Till, was because Till was a break-the-mold kind of guy right now at 170 who was actually a slugger that wants to fight instead of just lay and pray. I think that Masvidal has the game to knock out Leon Edwards, but if Edwards gets on top of him, I have no idea how that fight ends up.
Well, I think in Masvidal's favor is he does well. He does better with chaos than a lot of these guys. He comes from chaos. He is chaos. Leon, if you can get Leon Edwards out of his game and make it more of an emotional fight, it's going to play into his fat. And, you know, and you saw, where did this Edwards quote come from when he said, Jorge, fair play, sneaking your shots in when you could, but now you're effed. If security wasn't there, you wouldn't have made it back to the U.S. I'll see you soon. Was that a tweet?
I think that was a tweet.
Masvidal's hot, man. I mean, now we get into Edwards against Gunnar Nelson. This wasn't a dominant performance. This was a move the chain, 7 in a row. Look, not every fight's going to be that way. And Gunnar Nelson coming in, a lot of people liked him in this matchup. But Masvidal makes that a war. He's coming out with it.
But fair play to Leon Edwards in that fight. He did land an elbow to the orbital bone of Gunnar Nelson that in any other fighter probably stops them.
That was gross.
Because that hematoma got large very quickly. So I think that had more to do with how strong Gunnar Nelson's chin and will was, as opposed to Edwards not being able to get the finish. And again, I will point this out for the entire card. The scorecards on this event and the judges had no idea what the hell they were doing. They were all over the damn place with those numbers.
They were. And it's been bad lately. But how could it not be bad lately? There's still, I mean, look, this debate is old, but it still makes, it's still like you're using a boxing scoring system and you have some states that encourage judges to score more 10-8 rounds and other states that don't. Like it couldn't be more backwards and messed up. Get a unified system, figure something out. I don't know exactly what the answer is, but three judges doing a boxing judging system is not the answer. So, what are you going to do? They got to experiment with something. They got to. They have to. It's time.
I guess.
At the
I just
very
don't,
least, don't have different rules for each state. Why? It makes no sense.
I just don't know what's it going to take to get something to overturn how they've been scoring fights. Like, is it going to take Dana White getting really mad at one of these scorecards or these officials stopping a fight? Like,
I don't know. I've had that debate in boxing a lot for the big fights, which we see in boxing a ton. Every major fight, we see one scorecard that makes no sense. And you're like, well, what if you did five and you took out the highest and the lowest? That should get you close to an aggregate or whatever. I just think like in MMA, like overhaul the whole thing, come together. Why have this be an issue? That's the worst. It's the worst. In boxing, it's almost expected. It's a carnival. UFC doesn't need this. It doesn't need it, Brandon. There it is. I'm telling you.
All right. I agree.
Look, welterweight's kind of fun and hot right now, and we're obviously going to talk about this weekend's fight when Stephen Thompson faces former lightweight champion Anthony Pettis. That's also in the mix. How do you sort of handicap what comes next now? I mean, do you think we get Usman Covington? So that means that Lawler probably has to face – I'm sorry. That means Askren probably has to face Lawler again, or could Jorge get pumped up to face Askren?
Or could Lawler get pumped up to face Askren?
No, Jorge.
Jorge. I mean, Ben kind of went over there with the assumption that he's fighting the winner of Till Masvidal. So I could get behind that. I think those two would be perfect foils for each other to sell a headline, a plus event, or be on a pay-per-view card together. It would be good fun, I think. I think that's a, I don't know if that's a good matchup though for Masvidal, just because of the wrestling and how strong Ben is with his wrestling. Because like, if he doesn't land the shot that Robbie Lawler landed to start that fight, I don't know how that's going to go. Like, I don't see how that goes in his favor.
Yeah, if I'm UFC, I realize you got two personalities right there. Don't put them against each other, because the fight's not that large, so use them in other fights, and you can hope that they can keep climbing the ladder. So I like where this is going for this division, because I wasn't as up on this division a couple fights ago when Woodley was running through everybody and you were sort of running out of names. So we are going in a good direction, Brandon. Let's talk about the light heavyweight division. Because you know I want Jones out of here. I want him at heavyweight. I want the new blood to get a chance and figure out who's who. But new blood Dominic Reyes, who I couldn't have been higher on coming in. I really thought out of all that group, including that clown Johnny Walker Red that you love, and all those light heavyweights, I thought this was the guy. Gets the win over Volkan Ozdemir by split decision, but in no way did he deserve it, Brandon. And in no way did he take a step forward. This was a step backward. I'm going to give Volkan, who I have been harsh on in the past, a lot of credit for using his strength, but using his smarts to pull off what I thought was a close but clean decision win.
Yeah, this was a bad weekend for your boy. He looked lost at times in that fight. Like, he just had no idea what Volkan was trying to do. And this was one of those fights where the judges' scorecards, you're just like, how the hell did you give any of those rounds to Dom? Like, he got beat up pretty well in that fight, and it didn't look like Volkan had a scratch on him after the three rounds. So it's kind of like, I guess I could see the wrestling. I guess it seemed to me that Volkan thoroughly dominated for three rounds, and yet two of the judges still gave two out of three to Dom. It was a really weird fight, but it's one of those where it's like, all right, he got past it. He's moving on. Whatever. Don't have to speak of this fight ever again. Hopefully he gets that next step up in 205, because 205 needs him. And you can make the argument that if Volkan wins that fight, you're even more confused about what to do with 205, because it's just a cluster.
It is. And it needed Dom Reyes. You're right. And I look,
John Jones, get your shit together. I'm waiting for you.
I hope they're waiting for each other at heavyweight, because I think it is time for John Jones to go. No one else seems to agree with me on that, but I think it's time to find out who's next at 205. And this does keep the conversation strong that it would be Reyes moving on. And now you're going to have that June 1st fight, Anthony Smith coming back really quick after that loss to John Jones, where he didn't even want to come back. He was very honest about it. He's going to face Alexander Gustafsson. That's a very interesting fight. I almost feel we need an unofficial tournament here and put the title vacant and find out who is the guy. I mean, do you disagree or agree with me? Do you want to see John Jones one by one pick off a Thiago Santos, a Dom Reyes, a Johnny Walker, and give these guys maybe an unnecessary first loss when we know Jones's future is above and there's bigger money fights to make there?
So you're saying we should make a bracket?
I'm saying we should go on sportsline.com/brackets. Yes.
No, I 100% agree with you. I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when after John Jones won against Anthony Smith, it's like, if he stays at 205 now, and like you said, just starts picking off these smaller names that don't really carry much weight in Thiago Santos, Johnny Walker Red, Dom Reyes, if he starts just doing that, does that hurt his legacy? Like, there's nothing helping here making more of like the quote unquote greatest of all time argument for him. Cause like,
well, it just adds length to where I think it just adds a little more length to the legacy he's already built, which is
right. The
greatest light heavyweight of all time and maybe the greatest fighter of all time. But to solidify the greatest fighter of all time, it's heavyweight where you can do that.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, this to me, if he continues to do that path where he's just taking out Santos, Ozdemir, like whatever, if he's just taking out those guys at 205, he's not getting past GSP or Anderson Silva in my mind. And especially in the way that he did it against Anthony Smith. Like, if this is what John Jones becomes now, that's not impressive to me. You know, like that's just boring. That was it was technically sound and amazing, like technique, but it's not entertainment. And that's what we kind of want, right? We want to see him knocking dudes out And if he's not doing that at 205 and it's against lower level competition, that to me, it's not improving legacy and it's almost making it worse.
I mean, it's tiny steps forward or lateral steps. But the whole point is if somebody like a Johnny Walker could be a thing or could be a next big thing, you don't want him fighting John Jones anytime soon. You want him to get a chance to become that thing. So open up this division and find out if he is. Have him, you know what I mean? And make, like I mentioned, sort of an unofficial tournament. So he's going to have to beat a guy like a Dom Reyes or a guy like a Anthony Smith or a Gustafson to get there. Time for Jones to go. Business to be made here. That's just interesting, that decision that Smith had himself in where, you know, he wanted to go rest his mind and his body and be with his family, and now it's right back into training camp. How do you turn up, and how do you turn down an opportunity to fight somebody like Gustafson in a main event, which is going to put you right back in the title picture? It's a tough spot to be in. It's weird. You either could look at it as they're cashing him out, or you could look at it as, hey, company man, thank you for not winning the title by DQ. Here's another chance to get right back in it. It's very interesting.
Oh, man, the fact that you just said Anthony Smith and title picture again, if he beats Alexander Gustafson, made me, like, gag a little bit.
Well, yeah, but it's not your decision.
I'm the boss. It's my way and no other way. End of story.
End of story-wise.
Yeah. Close the book.
Yeah, so back the F up. All right. anything else from UFC London that tickled you right in the fancy spot?
The only other one that was of note to me was, man, do I feel bad for Danny Roberts, the dude who he gets into a firefight with Claudio Henrique de Silva, and then all of a sudden they just start grappling, and I guess de Silva had his knee wrapped. I don't remember what part he had, but he was trying to get a submission, and the ref says that he heard a verbal tap. But if you look at the replay, you don't even see Robert's lips moving. He's just breathing. And the ref just stops the fight saying, I heard you tap. And he broke down in the octagon. It was so sad. Like, that dude probably worked so hard to get to that point. He actually trains here with Henry Hooft at Hard Knocks 365 with Vulcan. Like, that was just heartbreaking for me. Mark Diakasi. He had a really big win over Joe Duffy, and he was just so emotional after the fight. He didn't even really want to do the post fight interview. That was a pretty interesting moment. That was a good feel good moment too. But I think that's about it, really.
Yeah, that's a good win for Diakasi. But that, man, that moment for Hot Chocolate Danny Roberts, that stunk. That stunk bad. That was a bad call. I mean, I get, like, you're trying to save a guy, but it's not like he was taking a beating from strikes. You just need to see more there. Dana White, I think, hopefully will reward Roberts. He came out and sort of publicly supported, you know, what a hard luck situation is. Hopefully they almost treat this like a win in terms of matchmaking, and he continue to climb the ladder, because here's a guy trying to make a name for himself, and that's a tough way to go. Hey, you down on this meatball, Molly McCann, the women's flyweight?
That was the other thing I just forgot to mention. All you saw on social media after that fight was her shiner just covering her eye that somebody actually, like, photoshopped a meatball onto.
Well, because wasn't she 3 years ago, she worked at a Subway and she was dressed up as a meatball?
Yeah. So
that's great.
Hey, she got her first win in UFC. That's pretty big accomplishment.
Yes. Yes. There are others who could not repeat that accomplishment. So that's well done right there. All right. Brando, let's get into the news this week. And it's not like we're hurting for news. There was a lot going on since this show last recorded. Where do you want to start here? Because what a wild week, and McGregor was all over it.
I mean, I think we got to start with him getting arrested, right?
Late last week in Miami, have you been to the Fountain Blue at the famous Live nightclub? I don't speak this language. Tell me about it. Tell me about it.
I actually have been to the Fountain Blue. It's a hotel, by the way. It's not the nightclub.
Well, he was coming out of the nightclub on the inside. The world famous nightclub, all right?
Yeah, so he was coming out of the nightclub, and I guess a fan wanted to take a picture with him, and Connor allegedly was okay with it at first, and then security guards just swarmed this dude, and Connor took the dude's phone, threw it on the ground, and then started stomping on it. And the guy was like, please stop doing that to my phone. I have like, he said after he had pictures of his kids that weren't uploaded to his iCloud, which sounds like the worst first world problems you can have. But
he might
yeah,
have creepy nudes in there. That's really what he was saying.
It was a just, oh, man.
Well,
what a weird situation.
The phone. I mean, TMZ ended up with video, but it was kind of after the fact, not a great shot. So, look, the original takes are like, oh, this Diary of a Madman, this Connor's out of control. And it is sort of another step in that direction. I laughed in reality at it. The guy wasn't physically harmed. Yes, he had property stolen, but I thought it was a joke that this was a felony, strong-armed robbery. Like
strong-armed robbery
like,
was
come
great.
Come on. But I think overall there is an angle to take to the idea of, like, this certainly isn't Connor going in the right direction, right? Overall, this certainly isn't like Connor taking one step closer to getting back in the cage and turning his career around, although I know subsequently there's a news report coming out that we'll talk about that he is sort of getting closer to that. But are you down with the people who say, can you not see what happened here? 5 a.m., nightclub, Connor probably not there with his girlfriend slash wife, maybe there with another lady, maybe this guy got that on tape, maybe that's what Connor was jumping in. Allegedly here, Brandon Wise, I don't have information to support that theory, but that's probably what you would do if you were famous and somebody got a picture of you with another lady, right?
We need a drop for, like, very loud speculation because that's all we're doing at this point.
If he was a girl,
but
you would say he has a badonkadonk.
Yes.
Yeah, that's I mean, remember the Dana White thing at the casino?
Yes, I was going to reference that when Colby caught that woman on camera and she scurried out of the way. No, I'm obviously joking. I have no idea on there. It's a jerk move, obviously. It's a celebrity move. We've seen it before. Even with that video, it's tough to tell who's at fault, how that started. It's stupid. It's a celebrity being stupid. It's 2019. Everyone's got a cell phone. Whatever, Wise. Really, whatever on that. You know, it does sort of play into, though, the continuing threat of McGregor thinks he's better than everybody. He's going to do what he wants. He's a superstar. Is he brawling with the Irish mafia? We don't really know. Is his life going in the wrong? Like, yeah, it does support that to a certain degree. But are you putting any extra layers on it than what it was, which is he stepped on a guy's phone and ran away with it?
No, I thought it was funny when you guys alerted me to this while I was in Montreal. I started laughing at the table with my wife because I was just like, really? Like, this is, I was like, the first note I got was Connor got arrested. I was like, oh no. And then I read the actual story and I was like, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, that is that. But that was not the end of the Connor in the headlines this week. Dude, he's everywhere. I'm seeing like, I'm seeing a lot of proper 12 whiskey on my timeline. I'm seeing Dylan Danis take down like a whole bottle. There's no chance that was whiskey, dude. There's no chance.
No. I was bamboozled into thinking that was whiskey at first because I sent it to you and you're like, wait a minute. There's no way he drank an entire bottle. What is that? 16 shots?
I mean, I'm not saying that's impossible, but you got to be a diesel man. You got to be like an absolute dirt hole. Like, you got to be a full on raging alcoholic. You're telling me this world class athlete, Dylan Danis, just no, it's not happening.
Wait, world class athlete?
Yes, you heard it
right
here.
He's fought one time.
You heard it right here. He's a jiu-jitsu phenom. Get it through your skull. Do you think Ben Askren will accept his challenge, by the way, on the internet to do that grappling tournament?
He keeps trolling him, trying to get him to do it. Ben Askren would be smart to just not. Don't. Why would you entertain this fool?
Yeah. Well, the Tour de Connor hit Boston this week, and did you like his speech to the Boston Bruins about your brothers on your left and your right? Look, it was cheesy. It was fine. That was a cool moment. There were some cool pictures and photos that came out of that. But then he got a little meme-y on the old timeline, calling back to when he beat Max Holloway, like a 16-year-old Max Holloway many years ago in 2013 UFC, which started a nice little back-and-forth business. Where are we going here?
Yeah, I mean, so they want to keep talking about this fight. I think that Max even said that he's ready to do this in July if he gets through Dustin Poirier at UFC 236. We've kind of talked about this in the past where this is like one of those fights for Max that makes the most sense going forward, especially if he's going to stay at 155 and like this is going to be his new home. I just don't know if that's a good fight for Conor right now, man, because Conor needs a win, and I don't know if that's a win.
Like, Conor's not, like, Conor's got a big head, but he doesn't have a big head enough. Like, he has to realize the other side of the argument, the same argument that Holloway's been making on Twitter. The argument goes like this: you beat me when I was like 19, bro, and you couldn't even finish me, and I've improved a hell of a lot since then, and you're possibly declining. Like, Conor has to see that, or do you think Conor's head is so big that he goes, oh, Holloway, I already beat him, I'll beat him again?
Yeah, I think that he's only looking at how he beat him the first time. He's not looking at the improvements Max has made, or he just thinks that Max's striking is not as strong as Max thinks it is. Because, like, when we watched the Holloway Ortega fight, it took him a long time to finish Brian Ortega, who again showed he had a chin and huevos rancheros to stand in there and take all of those shots, but he didn't put him out, and that's still saying something.
All right, then maybe Conor is not a big-headed, idiotic sort of blowhard. Maybe he's a lot smarter business-wise than we realize. Let's break this down. Are you ready? Conor was at the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Boston? Or was it Chicago?
Chicago.
I can't keep up with him. Well, he gives an interview and he drops that he is in negotiations for a possible July comeback for UFC. So that sort of goes against the idea of he's just out there getting arrested, not trying to fight. Dana did say that Conor, the only fight he keeps talking about is a Khabib rematch. Well, he's not going to get the Khabib rematch right now because Khabib can't fight again until at least July. And has already said he's not fighting in Vegas again, so it's probably more like a fall thing. So if you're Conor wise, do you see the quickest path to getting Khabib is by trying to get Max Holloway into a quick turnaround? A guy he's already beat. A guy who will not take him down, mind you. A guy who will strike on the feet. A guy who couldn't finish Brian Ortega's giant huevos, as you mentioned. Maybe Conor goes, that's a great style matchup for me. And if I win that, I'm the interim champion. You can't deny me a Khabib fight, which is the only fight I want. If that's where his mind actually is, then this is a pretty smart sequence and routine he's going through.
Yeah, it's the only way that makes sense because, yeah, like you said, Dana wants to keep telling people Conor's only interested in a rematch and he needs the quickest path to that. Now, we thought going into the last few weeks that was a fight against Tony Ferguson. But, of course, now we'll get to it in a minute. Tony Ferguson's going through his own issues. So if what you said is true, then yes, I agree. That's the only way he's going to get a Khabib rematch. It's also, to me, one of the ways that you get past Holloway in terms of legacy. Because we talked about it after Holloway beat Ortega. Where would we rank those three in the 145 like all time? Holloway, Aldo, and McGregor in terms of what they accomplished. I mean, if he beat Holloway now, then that is saying something for Conor McGregor's own legacy.
Oh, it'd be incredible. You know, and the same thing with if by the way, Holloway could lose to Poirier in theory, and he's already beat Poirier as well. But yeah, legacy-wise, at this point, that's a monster win for Conor. This is interesting. I think I went from late last week going, oh, Conor arrested again, man. He's not the same dude anymore. Where's that eye of the tiger? Well, what I've seen since then is showing me that it's coming back a little bit. And if Khabib stays out to the fall, and Conor's the last man standing out of that group, wow. Wouldn't have thought that. Wouldn't have guessed that. It's just interesting the road we've been on lately. Of first it was, you know, Conor pulled out of Cowboy talks because they didn't want to make that a main event, apparently, and which seemed idiotic because of Conor's star power. But if we can get him back in July, that's monster.
Can I just say, though, that we've been doing this podcast for, what, 4 months now together? I'm so sick of booking these fights for these guys. Just get them in the damn octagon already.
Well, this is such a deep and amazing division with this odd bottleneck at the top. The top two guys are suspended. The other top guy, Tony Ferguson, now we don't know when and if he's going to come back after the news this week. And just to wrap up quickly, his wife filed a restraining order, a domestic violence restraining order against him in Southern California. claiming a bunch of things, claiming, first of all, one of the things that came out was that the police were dispatched to their house like an obscene amount of times over the past 14 months, all for reasons that paint Tony Ferguson, you know, allegedly as mentally unstable. And look, we all know he's crazy, like in a fun, let's promote fights type of way. This guy's crazy. He takes punishment. Listen to his off the wall promos that he gives on microphone. He's amazing. Well, no, like this paints a almost a madman. And then the alleged, showing up at his in-laws house, pushing people out of the way, stealing his 2-year-old son, and then escaping by foot in the rain, leaving his car and cell phone behind, son not even really fully clothed, and then just ditching. That's all pretty interesting. And I know he's since subsequently trying to come out with tweets that sort of quiet it down, say, hey, we all have problems. We can only speak to what he's alleged here, but man, that's really tough because there's a fine line in this. We love craziness. We love toughness. We love trash talking. We sort of love this, but Tony Ferguson's been on a hard road, and these are some really rough things to get accused from, Wise.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where I really hope he's getting the help that he needs. This is the kind of stuff, though, that just kind of shocks you and scares you, because Matt Hughes just had a similar thing with this. And what everybody wants to say immediately is CTE and brain damage, because, well, obviously Matt Hughes has his own issues because of the train wreck that he had. But this is the kind of odd behavior that you see from athletes that are going through a lot of brain issues. And we saw it a lot with football players in the last few years, in the last couple of decades. So if that is the case, I really hope Tony gets the help he needs and we don't see him back in the octagon soon, because that's the kind of stuff where if you get more repeat damage to your brain, it's scary.
And it may not even be that. It may just be, you know, we're a lot more woke in this day and age to mental illness and some of the stuff that his wife is accusing him here. If you really read the fine details on it, I mean, him like thinking there's, you know, bugs inside of his skin, and like, you know, meaning chips inside of his skin and people spying on him. Like, it's just like there was a lot of crazy stuff that came out of the allegations there. And you just hope that he's mentally stable. You hope that it's not affected by or escalated due to the head trauma in the sport. Here's a guy who's 35 now. Man, to get that Khabib fight 4 times and then never actually get it, to be on the cusp of a title shot so many times, to get the interim title, to have one more freak injury last year, and then Brandon turned it around in like record ass time, put in a fight of the year against Pettis, and now be in this spot. That's a tough career arc there. I'd much rather see him away and getting healthy and come back in one piece and finally get his opportunity. But yeah, let's take this slow. And luckily it seems that UFC is, from all accounts, jumping in and being a big help right now.
If we didn't see him again, would he be on that list with Dan Henderson and Damian Maia as biggest name, or not biggest name, but best fighters to never hold the UFC title?
I would have to think so. The run he's been on has been incredible. And you'd like to see more big names on there than there is, but it's still pretty damn impressive. He never did get that one key breakthrough win that a resume needs, but that's as close as you can come to winning a title and not actually doing it. Man, you know, I'm torn. I want to see him back, but I don't want to see him back. I want to see him get to where he needs to be. But wow, this is a dark game. And speaking of that list, Brandon, of people, the ultimate bridesmaids, Michael Bisping cracked that code, ended up winning a middleweight championship late in his career, and now he's the number one, the first on the list of the 2019 Hall of Fame class that, of course, will be released in July at International Fight Week in Las Vegas. Just so you know, UFC has no real rules. They're almost more reckless than the WWE Hall of Fame, where who gets in and why and when doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. People get in like right after they retire, but Bisping retired officially last March. He is now getting in. Do we have bittersweet feelings on this?
I feel like you and I are in the minority here, where we don't think he actually deserves it, and a lot of people do. Well, and I'm still so confused by that, because it's like, guys, the Hall of Fame is supposed to be on resume. It's not about being the first British champion. Like, who cares? His resume sucks.
I mean, it's tough. So first of all, there's no real standards. So, but if we're comparing this against if this was a Hall of Fame with actual standards, like MLB, like the, you know, like the baseball Hall of Fame, which seems to have the toughest standards, right? The Pro Football Hall of Fame has good standards. Pro basketball one, no, because it's not even pro basketball. It's just the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. But I could see where he could get in because he did win that championship that put the you know, the final bell on his career. But here's the thing. He's got two big wins in his career. Two. Knocked out Rockhold. You cannot take that away from him in the rematch. He won the championship. He did. It made the whole career make sense for being a career bridesmaid and never being able to get over that final hill. And then before that, he beat Anderson Silva. But the thing is, Wise, he didn't actually beat Anderson Silva, all right? I thought that fight should have been stopped with the flying knee, and I thought he lost on the scorecards. But that's fine. His title reign? What'd he beat? He beat 46-year-old Dan Henderson in a title fight that shouldn't have happened, and he almost lost, and he almost got stopped twice. You look back over his career, yes, there's the consistency. Yes, there's the what a great trash talker, hardworking guy, great for the sport. Yes, when he retired, I think he was tied for most wins in the UFC, and he's up there in all those categories. But Wise, who the hell did he beat during his career? He's lost to every big name. Tell me now, outside of Rockhold and Silva, and I'm not saying they don't matter, because he may get in anyway if this Hall of Fame was real just because he won the championship and he's done all these things and won 20 fights in the UFC. But let's be really honest. Let's call that up. Who the hell did this guy beat?
Tyus Latis? CB Dalloway? Alan Belcher? Brian Stann? We like Brian Stann. Jason Miller? Jorge Rivera? Yoshihiro Aikama? Akayama, sorry.
Sorry, don't besmirch Sexyama. Please do not.
Chris Lieben? I mean, come on, man.
I mean, it's...
Dude,
this is
the thing. No, hold on. This is the thing. When you think of Michael Bisping's UFC career, what's the one moment you are going to remember?
Getting knocked out by Dan Henderson. No, well, I mean, it would have been getting knocked out.
But, I mean, for me anyway, that's what I'm going to remember. So if that's your biggest accomplishment... I say with air quotes, like, how is that a Hall of Fame career? You didn't knock, like you knocked out Luke Rockhold and you were one of the biggest underdogs to ever do that to win a title. That's a great accomplishment. That doesn't make you a Hall of Famer. If that's the case, then Holly Holm is going to be a Hall of Famer because you knocked out Ronda Rousey. Congratulations. Then you went 1-5. Like, yeah. So Holly Holm, if that's the case, then she's a Hall of Famer. I just don't think Bisping deserves to be in the Hall of Fame when his biggest accomplishment is getting knocked the F out by Dan Henderson.
Well, his biggest accomplishment is finally winning a championship. We can't take that away from him, but it's just the sort of thing. Like, I love the numbers and all that, but we made a little bit of joke, but like those big wins, it's like Matt Hamill, Chris Lieben, Mayhem Miller, Brian Stann, Kung Lee. It's okay. And I know you add Anderson Silva and Luke Rockhold to that, but it's just not doing it. And I amazingly, some people are going to hear this rant and be like, what are you, crazy? I love Bisping. The guy learned how to tuck his chin.
It's not open for debate. Uh-oh. The chin has to be tucked. Ask any striking coach. Karen, you're very good at reading the teleprompter. We are the fighters, okay?
Wow, I think he told Karen to go in the kitchen and make him a sandwich. That was a little borderline right there. But the point is... Yeah, I'm mad that he knocked out Rockhold at the point where Rockhold was going to become the biggest non-John Jones star in the sport. All right, maybe that was wishful thinking from a Rockhold super fan. But all jokes aside, congratulations to him. He is a great personality, great broadcaster, a great trash talker. But, yeah, that's tough. That's tough. I mean, 11-7, Matt Serra wouldn't have made my Hall of Fame either. But he got in last year. That's a weird Hall of Fame, the UFC.
Well, let's look at it like this. If he actually beat GSP, then I wouldn't have any issue with this. But he got his ass kicked. Like, plain and simple. He lost that fight. And if he would have beat Anderson Silva before Anderson Silva exploded his leg and then had to go on a year suspension for USADA, maybe. But these are all the factors that go into it when you look at a person's resume. And
it glaringly lacks big wins. It really does. But whatever. You'll see him there in July. All right? What's that card going to look like right now? That International Fight Week. Could we see Conor on that? Could we see DC against Brock on that? What's your guess? I know we hate booking the territory every week, and then no one of these fights actually happen. But that they got to go big for that one. They have to.
My hope, well, first of all, if it's Conor, Conor's the main event. Because like he said, like what was rumored was that Conor refuses to be a co-main event. He's the big show. So if it is, then that means Conor versus TBD at this point. I mean, I like Holloway. I like the idea of Khabib, but Khabib can't fight. I just don't want it to be Conor against Cowboy in the main event of fight week, because that to me, that just doesn't feel like the big fight of the year. You know, like July is supposed to be the big fight of the year. So my hope would be it's DC against either Brock or John Jones. I hope. And then you just kind of stack and fill in the rest. Like hopefully Robert Whittaker's healthy enough to fight at that point, and he's fighting Israel Adesanya or Kelvin Gastelum. That would be a lot of fun. Maybe Jose Aldo's back, if depending on what goes on with him and Alexander Volkanovski.
We're going to see. So the Rose Namajunas fight against Andrade will be UFC 237's main event. Doesn't Shevchenko have a title fight date for Jessica Eye? Or if they don't, I mean, that's not the...
That's the one at June. That's the 238.
Chicago. Yeah. All right, so this will... It's tough. I hope they blow it out, though. I hope they make
TJ, it. TJ? Maybe TJ Dillashaw...
Cejudo or TJ Marais. That could be something. That could be interesting. Yeah, that's going to be a fun card. They're going to make that matter. They're going to make that work. Anything else in the news cycle this week?
Oh, the news that happened before we started recording, ESPN is now owns all pay-per-views for UFC. I don't know if you saw that press release or not, but ESPN Plus is now the exclusive home in the U.S. for all UFC pay-per-views starting with 236 in April.
So does that mean that Facebook and UFC Fight Pass will no longer be doing any form of undercard fights for at all?
I tried to read that press release a couple times to understand what happens with Fight Pass, but ESPN Plus now owns all of the card. So why even need a Fight Pass account anymore, you know?
That's interesting. That is,
it's weird.
It is weird, but there's so much money involved for the UFC. It seems to make sense. What I didn't get was that extra factoid. Can you break down what the extra factoid is on the price now of the pay-per-views?
Oh, man. So if you do not have an ESPN Plus account right now before this fight in April, the pay-per-view for Holloway-Poirier is going to be $80. It factors into the price of your account, I guess, for ESPN Plus, but it's going to be $80. If you already have a Plus account, it's still the standard $60.
That's weird.
I hope to God that's not like every pay-per-view is going to be $80. It's just the first one. But that's a lot more money for one pay-per-view just to get it because you now have it on Plus.
Yeah, I don't necessarily like where that's going. That's going to be interesting. I really need to read that in depth and see what that's all about and see how that plays out. But, man, you know, when you see something like DAZN coming around, and I know in boxing, and of course DAZN does Bellator and Combate and MMA, but in boxing, DAZN was sort of like we're killing pay-per-view, you know, like pay-per-view's dead. Sign up for DAZN, $9.99 a month. And it's like, it's crazy if that model can work. It worked in the WWE for the WWE network. You know, they took that big gamble of taking away $60 pay-per-views and hoping that everyone would sign up for $10. If that's the future, man, and it could be, and boxing sort of fighting against itself. Some people are doing more pay-per-views than they should, but yet DAZN's got all these big stars and now they're rolling it out for $9.99. I don't necessarily like the idea that UFC's now going in the opposite direction. Can we just get I don't know, man. I mean, this is UFC's bottom line. This is their business. This is their backbone. But it used to mean something, right, Wise? It used to mean something 2 to 3 times a year where you didn't mind paying as a fan. You didn't mind having a party at your house because that fight was so big I had to see that on pay-per-view. And then UFC sort of followed the WWE model of like, well, we'll do a pay-per-view every month. If those prices are going to start getting up to boxing prices now, that's rough. That's rough.
I mean, the Mikey Garcia fight this weekend was $75. That was, to me, that was crazy because neither of those guys had really been pay-per-view stars before. Yeah, even.
That was certainly a questionable. We haven't seen the numbers yet, and I thought it was awesome that they did get 47,000 people in that dome because it's obviously a great fight. But that was a questionable pay per view fight on paper. Meaning, if there was larger budgets on like Showtime at the moment, that would have been a great Showtime fight. But yeah, that's tough, man. That's tough. I'm a hypocrite though, because I don't think you want to hear this, Wise. You're a good fight fan. You've paid for pay-per-views. I've never paid for a pay-per-view in my life.
You're the worst.
In my life, I've had either an illegal box or I've worked at ESPN for 12 years, worked at CBS the last two years, you know, expensing pay-per-views. Never bought one as a fan in boxing or MMA.
What about, have you ever gone to a bar to watch a fight?
Yes.
So that, I mean, to me, that's kind of like you're paying for it because you're supposed to have to buy at least a drink or an appetizer to keep your seat.
Okay. I guess that's an argument there.
Because technically, like, I didn't buy 235, but I watched it at a Dave and Buster's with some friends.
Was Michael Chandler there at all?
No, he was not there. All this right. was in D.C.
All right. He's always on the commercials. I don't know. So I was just... All right, hey, let's get into this weekend. This is I don't want to say a good-ass card, but a good-ass main event as UFC invades Nashville with UFC Fight Night on ESPN+. Saturday, I believe. Saturday, yes. Heck of a welterweight main event here when you're talking about Stephen Thompson against Anthony Pettis moving up in weight. Style-wise, name-wise, love everything about this. The question, though, has to be, is what are we getting with Pettis right here? Wise, 32 years old. We know he's a former lightweight champion. We know hit a 3-fight losing streak after losing that belt. Started on that path of alternating wins and losses, which has now gone on for 3 years. There was the dip down to featherweight unsuccessfully. Now he's moving up. Coming off fight of the year against Tony Ferguson. Is this desperate? Is this smart? Is this a reinvention? The heck is this? Because I love the fight on paper.
I think this is more reinvention because he's always hated the weight cut anyway. I think this is a fighter getting older, thinking, I still can do this. I just need to move up a little bit, maybe keep a little bit more muscle, maybe don't hurt myself as much in training camp. I can kind of just grind through it. But it's a tough fight. Like you said, man, like Stephen Thompson, I don't view him as being like overly great in anything. Like, he's a karate guy, that's awesome, but he hasn't finished anybody in a long time. He's got a lot of gross decisions on his resume now, and maybe Anthony's, like you said about Mikey Garcia last week, maybe he's just crazy like a fox to move up here. Maybe he sees something in Stephen Thompson's game that he thinks he can expose, and hey, I'm here for it, because Anthony Pettis, we kind of wrote him off before that Tony Ferguson fight. He looked so good at 155, and he was so fluid, so smooth. I thought he was going to finish Tony Ferguson after he dropped him twice.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm hoping we see the new version of Anthony Pettis. I just hope for his sake this doesn't get sad. Like, if he loses this fight and then ends up like losing a couple more, like the legacy that Anthony Pettis has, it's such a good spot to be, like the first UFC athlete on a damn Wheaties box.
Yeah.
But if he ends up with like a 21 and 13 record at the end of his career, oh boy.
Yeah. I mean, I look back at that run. Of course, we remember after beating Benson Henderson to win the WEC lightweight championship, still one of the best MMA fights ever. It really is. That 5-round fight was insane. We know he lost his UFC debut to Clay Guida, but that run he went on, beating Jeremy Stephens, Joe Lozon, Donald Cerrone, Benson Henderson, Gilbert Melendez. That's insane right there, winning the UFC lightweight championship along that way. The fall-off's been hard, but it's like, what is he going to be at welterweight? Is he going to be a brawler? Like, he went out, he was willing to empty what was left inside of him against Tony Ferguson. He saw an opportunity there, right? He could have, like, catapulted into the title picture when he was really on the outside looking in. Took his chance, went for it. But what is he going to be at welterweight? Just a reckless brawler? I don't know, man. I don't know what to expect here. Yet on paper, I love this style matchup. I just don't know if the size is going to be too much for him. If Thompson's just going to be able to keep catching him coming in and pick him apart.
the wrestling showed a little bit better in that fight against Michael Chiesa. And I think if he's able to have that kind of success on the ground, we might see a different Anthony Pettis here. I think Anthony kind of at this point is playing into the style of his opponent, because Chiesa wants to wrestle with you. And he wanted to prove that he could out-wrestle the wrestler. And he did. And then he got into a brawling match with Tony Ferguson and nearly finished that off. So if he gets into a fight like that with Stephen Thompson, I like his chances more. But if Stephen Thompson starts doing the karate moves again like he did against Tyron Woodley, where he's just kind of waiting outside on the outside, waiting for a shot in, then we might be in for another boring fight, because Stephen Thompson's liable to do that when he's just trying to outpoint you. CC the Darren Till fight, even, because even the Darren Till fight, he was afraid of Darren Till's power, so he just stayed on the outside and tried to outpoint him.
I mean, that's his style. Like, he'll be a boring fighter if you don't press him.
Yeah, that's the problem. So
that's why this fight could be fun, because Pettis is going to press him. The thing is, will it get depressing if he keeps walking into stuff? Because Thompson's the worst guy to try to overwhelm like that.
Yeah, I just don't see that happening. I think Pettis will be smart enough to not get baited into one of those kinds of fights. And if he does, he's not going in for punches. He's going in for a takedown. So I think Pettis, I mean, I'm picking with my heart more than anything here. I think Pettis wins this fight just on points by being able to ground and pound on Stephen Thompson.
Wow, that's a bold pick here.
I've never really been impressed by Stephen Thompson's skills. Like, it's great, but...
He's never
beaten anybody of note, right, man.
Look, what do we start the show doing? We start the show saying it's all about Jorge Masvidal. He beat the bags off of Jorge Masvidal November 2017. You and I were there at MSG. That was a clinical performance. In his next fight, I thought he beat Darren Till. The two fights before that, really close fights with Tyron Woodley that could go either way. The six fights before that, he won them all. It's been a long time since Matt Brown beat him in 2012. Show me where this guy's not the same guy. Although, don't look now. We kind of forget this about Wonder Boy. Not a boy anymore. Dude's 36.
Oof.
36, yeah,
I did forget that. I mean, he beat 13 loss Jorge Masvidal now. Just remember that.
Oh, stop it. You can't start. You can't do that. You cannot do that.
But yeah. Hey, prove me wrong. That's all I'm saying. I want to see him be entertaining. That's all I want. I don't want to sit through another fight night card where I'm just sad and I'm half falling asleep because the fight's taking too long to get to a finish.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I don't think I have to pick Stephen Thompson here to win a 5-round fight. It's just going to depend on how aggressive Pettis wants to be. It would be interesting if he does take Thompson down, though. I think this could really be a fun fight. I'm hoping it will play out that way. I'm picking Thompson by unanimous decision. I think I got to believe Pettis has got a little bit more than to just walk into oncoming traffic and get finished here. I hope we can see a smart turn for his career. But we got a heavyweight co-main event that is interesting. Curtis Blaydes coming off that knockout loss in the rematch to Francis Ngannou against Justin Willis, who is, you know, big pretty. I don't love this guy, but we haven't seen him lose yet in the UFC either. Lost his pro debut, has won 7 in a row, all 4 of his UFC fights. He's a WSOF veteran. Could this guy be a sleeper heavyweight contender here, or is Blaydes just going to land him for 3 rounds? Where are you leaning here?
Yeah, I hope he's something. I mean, beating Mark Hunt was kind of impressive. That fight he had with Chase Sherman, too, he just looked like the better fighter, and now Chase Sherman is no longer in UFC, by the way.
Great tweeter, though. Yeah,
he is. I am worried that this is going to be a boring fight, to be honest with you. I'm excited about this card, but it's like, the whole thing is just kind of a lot of bleh to me.
Yeah, yeah. It's, Montreal's John McDessie, who you were hanging out with on your honeymoon, he'll be in this card as well. But
we got Macy Barber again.
Well, yeah. Let me get to that in 1 second. There's a flyweight fight. So does this tell you that the flyweight division is still around? If we're going to see Juicy A. Formiga against Deiveson Figueiredo. Frigo-weirdo. I just butchered that guy's entire name. I know who he is. I know this guy. I know this Brazilian. But unbeaten, this is going to be an interesting matchup. But what does this mean more for the future of the division? Can we pee or get off the pot here? UFC, what are you doing with 125?
no, we're just going to straddle that line. We're not going to make a decision on either side. We're going to keep hinting that it's going away, but we're going to keep putting out random flyweight fights like this.
All right. I guess Formiga could get himself. I mean, look, this is a tough matchup. He's fighting against a guy who's unbeaten. This is three in a row, though, for Formiga. He sort of stifled Sergio Pettis' title hopes at 229 with that unanimous decision last October. I guess in theory, this could produce a future title contender, or it might not. It could produce both of them unemployed. But Figueiredo has been. This looked really good.
Yeah. I'm hoping Formiga shows something, but. I mean, it's hard to argue with the deviate. How did you say it? Deviason?
I want to say Davison. That sort of is very Americanized, right?
Yeah. Davison. He's 15-0, so he's got something there. It's just, is he going to be strong enough and entertaining enough to get up to like a top five contender?
All right. Your broski, wacky Luis Pena's on here, right? Weird Bob Ross. He's back, right? The featherweight?
Violent Bob Ross, first of all. How did he become my boy? Just because I like Johnny Walker Red doesn't mean I like all the weirdos.
He'll be facing Steven Peterson. I want this guy to be something. Everybody wants this guy to be something. I guess this is a decent opportunity. This card, I feel like this is going to be like a set an alarm when the main event's on type of card.
For most people, yeah. It's kind of like what London was this weekend, right? Like, there wasn't a whole ton to like look forward to except for the main event.
Well, they're smart putting Macy Barber a little bit further down, so you have to kind of tune in because I know this is Brett Okamoto's favorite fighter, man, because he's glossing over her every time I see him writing her on the screen. What else can you say? Well, she's like 15 and she's amazing, but no, seriously, she's a prodigy. She's a monster star in waiting. Wasn't there some quote where Macy Barber said she's like John Jones, Anderson Silva, and Conor McGregor rolled into one? I mean, she's a confident person. Women's flyweight going to be fighting J.J. Aldrich. I'm here for this. I'm here for the Macy Barber experience. She's rough and tough. She goes to finish people. Let's see what we got here. Just don't fast-track her, UFC. Let's do this right.
Yeah, her last fight was when I think she gave that quote that you're talking about, and she was violent in that fight. So hopefully there's some more of that in this one.
Just 20 years old, out of Colorado, 6-0. There's an it factor. She certainly has that it factor, and it's not an it factor of looks, even though she is a good looking girl. It's more of just an it factor of somebody who gets it, but somebody who's violent. It's somebody you mix, you know, somebody who's so aggressive and goes after it. And seems to have known at a young age that this is what she wants to do. It wasn't something she fell into. She's calling herself the future. It's bold. It's bold.
Yeah, that's bold. We've got another Thug Nasty alert here.
All right, what do you got?
Bryce Thug Nasty Mitchell. He's a 10-0 featherweight who's fighting in the fight before Macy Barber. He's only 24. He won on the UFC, the Tough Finale, Tough 27 finale. I want to see what he's got. He's 10-0. He's got a little bit of spunk.
I'm in. I'm here for this. I'm good. I'm ready. Let's do this.
I'm here to get rid of a lot of the Thug Nasty nicknames.
All right. By the way, Violent Bob Ross, I knew he had lost recently. I was there for that. I wasn't there for that, but he had lost on that UFC Denver 25th card when he lost that split decision to the Ultimate Fighter winner, Michael Trezano. So he's going to have to bounce back from that. I'm down. Look, I'll be here. I'll tune in. I'll watch it. I'll check it out if you're a guy. Can Bryce Mitchell, who's going to be the star of this undercard? Who's going to be the one we talk about next week? That's what I want to know. All right. It's probably going to be Macy Barber. All right. Take that.
Angela Hill.
Well, you know, my women's strawweight rule. All the fights are great. They're all great. All right. Let's get out of here. Bellator also on Friday. It's in DAZN, also on Paramount Network with the double stream. It's Bellator 218. From the WinStar World Casino in Thackerville, Oklahoma. The heartbeat of Bellator in the heartbeat of America. Do you care, hair-wise? Featherweight main event, Emmanuel Sanchez against Georgi Karkanian. Do you care? Georgie's replacing Ashley Grimshaw. I don't care.
No.
I don't care.
The only fight I care about on here is Linton Vassell. He's in the co-main event of he's a heavyweight now. I didn't even know that.
He moved up to heavyweight. Good Lord.
He's a trainer at my boxing gym.
He's a good fighter. Linton Vassell, he's a good fighter. I got nothing against him. He's a good light heavyweight. He's 35 years old from England. got the back-to-back losses, but they're to Bader and Phil Davis. You can't hate on that.
Yeah. There's a whole lot of bleh on this card, too.
He beat my guy, Ramu Terry Sokaju. Gerald Harris on this card. Good Lord. All right.
Some of those names that you make up, sometimes they just sound like computer-generated options.
Yes,
on Madden.
Yes, yes, they do. Yes, they do. That's going to do it. All right? No more, no more, no less.
But black folks love me, man. Black girls love me, too, man. I get hit on by black girls all the time. I'd be like, oh, I'll be showing my nipple. I'll be doing my nipple dance.
Remember those days when Rampage would just do completely inappropriate things all the time?
I miss Rampage. He's so funny.
He's so fat now, but that's the truth. That's what it is. All right, next week we will not fantasy book the Conor McGregor territory. Let's just wait to see if this guy actually comes back. But no, seriously, the idea of him facing the winner of Poirier, Max Holloway, sign me up. That's probably a best-case scenario for UFC. Wow. Best wishes out there to Tony Ferguson and family. Get well. Turn this thing around. Special thanks to Brandon Wise at BrandonWise65 on Twitter. He's back. He's back in the fold this week. Please check out our other offerings on the State of Combat this week as we break down the Errol Spence Mikey Garcia pay-per-view on the boxing show and continue down the road to WrestleMania 35 on the Pro Wrestling Edition. Brandon, I know you get down with WrestleMania. I know you do.
I have. So you said you have never paid for a UFC pay-per-view before? Yes. I have never watched a wrestling pay-per-view. Not even illegal streamed. I used to, when I was into it when I was a kid, I would just like find out the next morning on Raw what happened, or the next night on Raw what happened the night before.
Not a good fan. Not a good fan.
I'm not. I wasn't.
That's it. We're going to have to go follow us on the Twitter webs. Subscribe. Tell your friends all that good stuff. Enjoy the fights this weekend. Nashville, we out.